13 of the Woke-ish podcast. This is Ebony.
And this is Zelma.
And this week we will be discussing our top 10 beefs with the woke movement. But before we get there, we have a few shout outs. Yes, we were able to find some. So our first shout out goes to...
Yes, a woman by the name of Marina Snowden. And she's the first black woman to earn a PhD in nuclear engineering at MIT.
Woo!
Yes, she said that she was often the only woman or black person in her classes. So a little bit of intersectionality here, not only as a, you know, being a woman and underrepresented in nuclear engineering, but also being a black person underrepresented in nuclear engineering. And what I always like when people thank every person who support them and didn't, because I think it's very real, especially for us in academia. I think we've all encountered our share of, if it's not direct unsupport, but indirect, just people who just kind of don't believe that you can do it, or are discouraging or not helpful. And so, you know, she thanked her family, her kids, her husband, and so I think she said that she completed like 11 years of post-secondary education. So
that is wild. Yeah. I couldn't imagine what it's like to be a black woman at MIT.
I know.
Pursuing your PhD. Like, that has to have been so isolating.
Yeah, not even let alone the school, but just like the region of the country where not, you know, it's not necessarily populated by people of color. But shout out to her, to Dr. Snowden, and always love a hate about having to highlight first still, because it's like 2018 to have a first something at MIT, which is such an old school, is kind of frustrating, but huge accomplishment to her, so definitely wanted to shout her out.
Yeah. Part of me hopes that she's going to be a professor so that she can motivate other people, but then I'm like, academia.
Yeah.
Okay, so our second shout out goes to gun control advocate Lucy Macbeth, who won the Democratic nomination for the U.S. House in Georgia's 6th congressional district. So Macbeth, a national spokeswoman for gun control group Moms Demand Action, won 53.7% of the vote. Some of you may know that she is the mother of Jordan Davis, a black 17-year-old who was shot dead in 2012 at a Florida gas station by a white man who complained that his music in his car was being played too loud. As a mother of the movement, part of a group of women who've lost a child to gun violence or in police custody, Macbeth's political campaign advocates for common sense gun violence prevention laws, including background checks, raising the age for firearm purchases to 21 years old, and fighting against concealed carry measures. The 2-time breast cancer survivor is also pushing for more affordable health care and improving women's access to health services. So the things that she's advocating for are things that she would think we kind of already would have in place. Like, they're kind of, you know, common sense, you know, campaign points, I think. But things that maybe aren't common sense to our current government. So shout out to her for, you know, all the work that she's done as a part of the Mother of the Movement group, but also like the political work that she's doing now and for the things that she's campaigning for, you know, which are super duper duper important. Like, I can't emphasize that enough.
Yeah, and to turn her pain into action, because no one, you know, she didn't have to.
Yeah.
And, you know, all she had to do was just survive.
Yeah.
And the fact that she
was hard enough.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that she not only survived emotional loss, but like fought literally for her life against cancer twice. Yeah. I just really hope that people see that, and that just either way, if she gets nominated, or if she gets, you know, if she wins or not, she's still, it's a huge accomplishment, and I'm really proud that there are people like this.
Yeah. Same. Mm-hmm. But maybe amount of hope. And this next shout out actually gives me a lot of hope too. So Chance the Rapper recently purchased the Chicagoist.com, a local news, food, and culture outlet. In his new single called I Might Need Security that dropped last Wednesday, he says, I got a hit list so long, I don't know how to finish. I bought the Chicagoist just to run you racist bitches out of business. In a statement, Chance says, I'm extremely excited to be continuing the work of the Chicagoist an integral local platform for Chicago news, events, and entertainment. WNYC's commitment to finding homes for the Dash-ist brands, including Chicagoist, was an essential part of continuing the legacy and integrity of the site. I look forward to relaunching it and bringing the people of Chicago an independent media outlet focused on amplifying diverse voices and content. Chance the Rapper just continues to amaze me. Like, I'm just always so wowed by, you know, his, I mean, all of the advocacy. Like, he's just, like, he's incredible. Like, his music, he's, like, an awesome rapper. Yeah, his music is great. And then he is, you know, completely, he proves time and time again that he's completely committed to bettering the community that he comes from. You know, he's really putting his money where his mouth is.
Yeah.
And doing things that, like, I don't even know how you begin to do something like this. You know, for people that know where you stand and like what your political stance is to allow you to purchase something that's this influential, knowing the kinds of things that you're going to print. But yeah, I mean, good for him. Like, he's like really, 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 really inspiring.
Yeah, and exactly like continuing kind of reflecting on our conversation last week about, or 2 weeks ago about hip hop. It's like, you know, he is not only doing music, and not all of his music is quote unquote woke or quote unquote about,
or even Christian.
Yeah, but just, you know, his work in the schools, his work in just giving back to Chicago, and I mean, he's doing more than Kanye has, and Kanye used to do stuff like that. But it's just really,
he's a free thinker.
Yeah. So, but it's just really nice that he's putting his money back in his community, and it's just, I was really happy to see this. And then congrats to him for getting engaged.
I hope some other rappers follow suit.
Yeah, definitely need more of that.
Yeah. Okay, so now we will transition to our In the Know segment. Okay, so now we are transitioning into our In the Know segment, which, if you've been listening, you know, it's always full of sadness.
Yes. And so, first wanted to talk about the Demi Lovato overdose, and not just for the reason of just like, oh, it's celebrity news, but just because it hits close to home for me in terms of knowing people personally who are battling with addiction and with maintaining sobriety. And so, and I was also a Demi fan. I followed her career since she was in the Disney show. Oh, actually, Barney, with her and Selena Gomez. That. Yeah, they were both on Barney. And then being in the Disney Channel. And then, so after 6 years of sobriety, on Tuesday night, Demi Lovato was found unresponsive due to an apparent overdose. Now, the cause is unknown. People were reporting that it was heroin, but people in her camp were saying it wasn't heroin. However, she was unconscious upon arrival. She had been having a party at her house. However, when they found her, she was by herself. So they revived her with Narcan, which is an emergency medication to reverse the effects of a narcotic overdose. So it could have just been an opiate. It could have been oxycodone. It could have been fentanyl. It's just unknown at this moment. And she had been struggling with addiction since she was 17. In June 2018, she released a song hinting that she had relapsed, and in it she was apologizing to her parents and her fans for not being sober anymore. Recently, people have started to suspect that she wasn't sober because she fired her sober coach. She was going to clubs more, which is something she did because she not only was abstaining from drugs, but she was also abstaining from drinking. And in a recent performance, she forgot the words to her song, Sober. Yeah. And so people were like kind of not surprised that she had a relapse, but definitely surprised that she OD'd. So I just wanted to share just some backdrop that, you know, relapse is a part of recovery. If you know an addict or if you've ever battled with addiction, people relapse. It's just what happens. It's it's actually pretty normal. But statistics show that the percentage of people who will relapse after a period of recovery ranges from 40 to 60%. I think also I read somewhere that it takes about 7 relapses before you maintain just long-term sobriety, which long-term can be like a year. And that people who make it past 5 years have only a 15% chance of relapsing. However, you know, Demi, she was young. She's only 25 now. So it's not uncommon for people to relapse. But I just wanted to highlight this story because I don't know. I saw things on the internet kind of pointing to just like jokes about the fact that she had relapsed, or making memes about some quotes that she said and about when she was sober, and then saying like, guess you can't say this anymore. And it's just, you know, addiction is a disease. Being sober is something you have to do work on every day. And instead of, I think one of the most important things I've learned in my personal experience is like, you can't always shame someone when they relapse, because being supportive means not giving up and not walking away. And there are people who disagree with me on this. There are people who are like, I will cut ties with you if you relapse. I will not be in your life if you're not using drugs. But I also think that there's a difference between people who relapse and want to get better and people who just relapse and then continue and go back to drugs. And so I'm hoping that this is just a relapse and that she gets back on track and that she realizes that she still needs to maintain the same amount of energy dedicated to her sobriety. Because I have also noticed and just seen in other people that sometimes you get into a state where you feel like you've been sober for enough time that you don't need to keep going to meetings, you don't need to see therapists, you don't need to stay with sober friends, and then they quickly fall back into old habits. And so just we're unsure as to why she relapsed or what was going on, but she's definitely been battling with depression and anxiety for most of her life. And if any of you guys have ever battled with that or know people who have, you know that it's a very long journey. And so just wishing her, you know, good thoughts for her family, the people around her. And then just kind of wanted to tell people listening, if you know someone or if you yourself are struggling with substance abuse or addiction, you can always call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration's 24-hour treatment hotline at 1-800-662-4357, or you can visit findtreatment.samhsa.gov for free. And as always, in case of a medical emergency, if you know someone who, I like don't like, it's hard to know when someone's overdosing, but if they're not conscious, and if you know that someone has an issue with drugs, if you're at a party, if something's ever fishy, if you ever feel uncomfortable, if you ever see someone, the last thing you should do is leave them alone, and the least you could do is just call 911. And so I think the saddest thing for me about this was that she was found alone. And she had had a party at her house, so there were people with her, but in the moment where she could have died and she definitely needed people to be there for her, she was by herself. And so just sending good thoughts to Demi, good thoughts to people if they're listening, if they have an addiction or know someone who has an addiction. It's definitely a dark and long road, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I do know people who haven't been able to maintain sobriety, and it is definitely doable. But yeah, just wanted to highlight that, not just to like highlight celebrity gossip, but to just highlight that she's been very honest about her sobriety and her addiction, and that hopefully this is just a bump, and that, you know, she can take the time that she needs, and people can be more understanding and empathetic, that this isn't a time to ridicule her or to kick her while she's down, but to just kind of step back and say that, you know, people abuse drugs because they're trying to cope with something else. And, you know, hopefully things change for her.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really unfortunate how we kind of, as a society make light of addiction. Mm-hmm. And I think that we don't, I think that a lot of people don't always have the frame for kind of evaluating what is going on. You know, especially because things, at different stages in your life, addiction is glamorized. Mm-hmm. You know, like for instance, for in college, right? So there are statistics that the average college student that does drink, binge drinks.
Yeah.
And the expectation is that once you graduate, you just stop.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think we, and I mean, a lot of, I mean, I know that at my university, like, there were all kinds of drugs coming in and out of frat houses. And so it's like, you know, if, for instance, the DEA actually wanted to crack down on drug use, they could hypothetically go into any frat house and just find tons of drugs. Kids were ODing all the time, but that's acceptable. Mm-hmm. You know, we condone drug use, alcohol abuse when it's in college, but then we expect that 23-year-olds who've developed an addiction are just gonna stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we need a better way of framing drug addiction or alcohol abuse, and we need a better way of, you know, understanding the language that you use to talk about it,
mm-hmm.
understanding that it is a disease, and, you know, that there are ways of dealing with it, even though it may not, I don't know, I guess maybe some of those ways don't seem sexy or whatever, mm-hmm. But it's hard, and it's important to be supportive mm-hmm. of the folks that you know that maybe are struggling.
Yeah, so sending, you know, good thoughts for her, and hopefully we'll get some news. I know she's awake now with her family,
yeah.
So hopefully she takes some time to herself to work on her sobriety, and, you know, if you are one of those people that don't want people with addiction in your life, which is totally fair and valid, just, like, not, but to not kick them down, so if you're not going to consider yourself as a support network, also don't be part of the network that's, you know, kind of criticizing them and being critical and, you know, pointing fingers at others and just kind of reinforcing why they are not good people. Yeah. So we'll definitely be following, and I'll, you know, in the future, hopefully have better news about Demi. But
yeah. Okay. So now on to more saddening news. So Nia Wilson was an 18-year-old who was stabbed to death by a stranger as she disembarked from public transit, so the BART, in Oakland on Sunday night. She died at the scene, and she was accompanied by her sister, who was also stabbed.
Mm-hmm.
And on Monday night, a vigil was held in her honor at MacArthur Station, where she was killed. A Facebook page for the event described the gathering as a place for the community to come, hold space, light a candle, and be together in collective grief. The vigil soon transformed into a protest, with members of the community leading call and response chants of "Say Her Name" and "Nia Wilson." Wilson's death is the third linked to the Bay Area Rail in less than a week. Police have yet to establish a motive for the attack. Officials said it was unclear if race played a role in the shooting. Cowell is white, and the women he is accused of stabbing are black. And so the crazy thing that I've heard the police department say is that because he did not know these women, they're kind of trying to rule out that it was a hate crime.
Yeah.
Or essentially they're ruling it out because I guess to them, race-related hate crimes would come from the victim and the perpetrator knowing one another.
Well, I think a hate crime has the heaviest sentencing.
But I don't understand why they're assuming that because he didn't know them, then it's probably not a hate crime. Wouldn't it be the opposite?
I mean, Dylan Roof was charged with hate crimes, and he didn't know the people that he shot.
If you don't know someone, there's no connection between you, you're a white man, you just walk up to two black girls and kill one of them, That sounds like probably hate.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's no other rhyme or reason.
No, I mean, they didn't know Martin Luther King personally, I'm sure, but they shot him, and that's a hate crime. No, I mean, that was very, it's frustrating that we have to prove as people of color that we have to prove the most basic thing, which is, like, more frustrating than proving the Starbucks thing was racist. More frustrating than proving, you know, being called the police on while you're sleeping at an Ivy League school is racist. But, like, when people are actually murdered and the person was spotted at a white supremacist rally and you having to people say, we don't know if it's race-related, is just, to me, so insulting. And you just, I just think of her family and being like, they're just never going to get closure. There's just, the way that they're already framing it, the fact that we're not all just on the same page about, like, well, obviously he did it because they're black and he's white.
Yes, or even that Nia is a victim.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, and then on top of that, so obviously the news, like we would expect, mm-hmm. is victim blaming and putting Nia, who was murdered while minding her damn business,
mm-hmm.
they're putting her on the stand, per usual,
mm-hmm.
because the picture that they use to announce that she had been murdered is a picture of her with a phone case,
yeah.
that looks, I guess on one side it looks like a gun, right? Yeah. So she's holding her phone to her head, and the image that they're using, you obviously can't tell it's a phone case.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like a gun.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are a millennial, you know that, you know, these phone cases exist.
Yeah.
Right? But obviously they're trying to depict her as somebody who was potentially violent, somebody who was potentially involved in things that may have led to her death. But what does that picture, they could have picked from a ton of other pictures, right? Because I think they got this from her Instagram.
Yeah, they did.
They could have picked a ton of other pictures. And so why are you using this image to basically, I don't know, like, they're using this to frame her character. But yeah. What would that have to do with her being stabbed and murdered? I don't understand the connection that they're trying to draw other than to portray her in this way.
Yeah.
I mean, we know by now that, like, if you have been following any of these incidences, you know not to trust the media.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, so I don't expect any more of them, but it still frustrates me. It irritates the fuck out of me to see stuff like this, because it's like, I mean, at what point will they ever, like, I don't know, it's like, how can these people sleep at night?
Yeah, and her sister had to come out and say she was a sweet person, she was caring. It's like, this girl who just saw her sister murdered, who was herself almost killed, in critical care at the hospital, feels the need to have to defend her sister. Her dad has to feel the need to, like, humanize her and say, you know, my daughter, who's, like, let's not forget, is 18, 1 year away, like, she just is barely considered an adult, and just having to remind people that, no, my daughter deserves sadness. Like, my daughter deserves compassion. My daughter
deserves to be murdered.
Yeah, and just, I know, it's just so frustrating. It's so sad. It's not only them as victims of, I think, because of their race, but also let's not forget the fact that it's a woman being murdered by a man, and against, like, highlighting the violence against women, especially violence against black women, and feeling like, I think the police said that it was comparable to a jailhouse stabbing, like how fast it was. You just came up, attacked them, and then left very quickly. And the, you know, one of the investigators said he hadn't seen this was the most violent thing he had seen in 30 years. So just, this was just not how people should die. And then to add salt to the wound and to just have to defend the fact that she didn't deserve to die, or that she has to defend her character, or the fact that there are so many other kids, white kids, you know, Dylan Roof, like all these mass shooters, they don't look through their Instagram and pull up photos of them with guns, or pull up photos of them, whatever, but it just so happens that people of color are always portrayed so negatively, so criminally, even when they themselves are the victims. And so, yeah.
It's like, very frustrating. There are tons of white kids in the Midwest, in the South, all over the country, who are happily gun-toting, mm-hmm. right? And yeah. so if we are a nation that is claiming that you have the right to bear arms, why are we depicting, why are we choosing this picture of this girl holding a fake gun but trying to pretend that it's real in order to portray her in a negative light?
Yeah.
Those things are counterintuitive. Like, are guns okay or are they not?
Yeah. Well, guns seem to be okay when you're
not brown.
Yeah.
Not like, brown apparently, like, black. If you're, like, if you got brown skin, like, you just...
Yeah.
I mean...
You better just have praying. I mean, even if you just have praying pics, she could have been, like, praying in every single Instagram photo, and they would have found a way to make it seem like it been, like, teen girls walking late at night from suspicious, or teen yeah. girls walking.
Always. And yet, yeah. there somehow, there are people that see stories like this, and they just eat it up. They just mm-hmm. buy everything that the media says.
Yeah. So, yeah, we definitely wanted to take this opportunity to just portray Nia Wilson's murder as what it is, which is a murder, a hate crime, a terrible injustice, and... It's sad to say that I can't even say whether this will be, he will be convicted of a hate crime, whether he will even do life in prison. You just can never know. And so the least we can do is, you know, say her name and remember who she was. And I really appreciate all the, like, one thing I do like about social media is the fact that a lot of people are so artistic, and there's so many depictions of her, like, in cartoon form, in portrait form, just spreading around, kind of, like, just remembering her as the beautiful young woman that she was, to kind of drown out the images that some of the media is using of just her as someone not worthy of compassion or empathy. So, definitely just wanted to dedicate some time to her, and just... very sad to have to once again include another person of color's death in this week's In the Know segment. And so with that, we will transition to our What's Being Slept On, where we talk about our top 10 issues with the woke movement.
So I strongly suggest that you wake the fuck up.
Okay, so now we're transitioning into our What's Being Slept On segment, discussing our top 10 issues with the woke movement.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so number one, feeling like we have to support any and every nonconformist movement.
Yeah.
So sometimes, I don't know, maybe I'm getting, or maybe I have gotten, like, I don't know. I don't want to call it exhaustion, but just, like, there are just so many movements out there.
Yeah.
So many. And even, like, movements that sprout up underneath movements. Right? Yeah. So.
Well, one recently where I was, like, even if this is a movement, I just, like, there's just so much energy. So, like, the whole straw thing. Have you heard about that?
No.
How Starbucks is getting rid of the straws? Because they want to reduce the amount of waste.
Plastic waste. Okay.
But then all of these disability rights groups started getting on them and saying, like, wait, people who are disabled need this. People who are old need this. Like, straws are actually very important to a lot of people. And by getting rid of them, you're excluding and marginalizing that population.
Dang, so it was like two movements pitted against each other.
Yes.
Environmentalists.
Yes.
Oh, God.
And so they were kind of like circulating petitions, you know, being like, shame on you, Starbucks.
Oh,
and I was just kind of like, I don't have a, you know, I don't have a dog in this race. I just kind of have, like, stepped back from that and was like, I don't go to Starbucks. I don't, you know, use their drinks
yeah.
and it doesn't impact me. But then kind of feeling like, fuck, like, because I'm woke, should I be, like, involved in this and care about it and be, like, you know, reposting in my Instagram about this. It's not like I'm anti-disability, but
I feel like there has to be a way around that. Not a way around it, but, like, maybe they could have straws only for old people. are only for people that need them, that absolutely need them, you know?
Oh, like you can request one?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's like a straw provided upon request. I was going to say initially that like maybe they could charge for them, but I guess that's like,
they would be mad.
Know,
yeah.
I know that.
I was just going to say bring one from home, but then I was like, yeah. Oh, that's
I was also, yeah, I was thinking that maybe they could sell like the kind, the reusable kind, like those tote bags. Because, you know, like, Trader Joe's has the tote bags where, like, if you, like, they, well, they don't have plastic bags anyway. Like, they have paper bags, right? But you can also, if you even want to reduce your paper waste, you can buy a reusable tote bag. And I have a bunch of those, but I always forget them at home or in my trunk.
Oh, yeah.
But then in California, there are no stores that, where you can get plastic bags for free. You have to pay for them. They're all 10 cents. And so initially, jeez, my first thought was like, oh, okay, maybe they can pay for the straws, but then that's
they would
inequality.
Be, yeah, yeah, that would. They'd be like a tax for being disabled. Yeah, so it's not like I mean, I am for people, you know, I'm not saying that I want to marginalize people with disabilities or people who are older or people or like children who need straws because of certain developmental issues, but I just didn't really feel like just like I have so much stuff like all the time, so many movies, and even saying it I feel shitty, but it's like
it's
I have to be honest, yeah, I'm not gonna pretend have, like yeah no
like
I'm,
we are in school full time like this, you know, like supporting any movement actually is like time taken away from, and you know, these are like privileged people complaints,
yeah,
but it's like that's time taking away from the other, my obligations. And so I cannot sign every petition. Like, every single petition. No, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't do it. And they're tons. They're always in my change.org is sending me
yeah,
petitions
I know.
Every 5 seconds.
And I feel bad unsubscribing, so I don't. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So it's, I mean, yeah. So that was my number one. Number two, everything is not a movement.
Yes.
Not everything.
Yes.
Needs, like, deserves for us to be rallied behind. So, I don't know. I have a really hard time with this because I feel like a lot of times people want to find ways that they are oppressed. Like, to the point where they are digging, you know? And it's like, dude, you know, they're not to, and I've heard about this before too, not that I'm trying to create a hierarchy of oppressions, but there are people that are literally losing their lives for having blank marginalized identity.
Yeah.
That is a real thing.
Yeah.
You know, like there are people that are being murdered because they are like racial minorities. There are people that are being murdered because they are a sexual minority. Like
yeah.
this is real. So I mean, I'm sorry, but some of these other things they just aren't as salient. Like, they don't take precedence for me. They
yeah.
just don't. So, I get it if it's, like, something that, you know, you or whomever wants to rally behind, but you can't be mad that, you know, you're only getting 15 signatures on your petition or whatever. Like, it's hard out here. I'm already black and woman, like, and come from poverty. Those are already too many things, dude. Too
I know.
Many things.
That's how I feel about Free the Nipple. I'm
like,
just kind of like,
what?
Bitch, I don't care that you want to show your nipple or that you want to feel
gosh.
Like that's not important to me. What is important to me is like not being murdered, not being deported.
No, like, dude, show your, if you want to show your nipples, don't wear a bra. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Why
I mean,
do,
just
why
do
why
that,
do
but
movement?
I don't, yeah, I don't need to be part of that movement. And then feeling like because I'm a woman, I really have to support you wanting to show your nipple. Like, no. So
yeah, like,
I feel that everything is not a movement.
Okay, so three, overly hostile to folks who genuinely don't get it, or folks who just don't agree. So I've seen this a ton, you know, and I don't know, maybe it's just me, because even when it comes to people who are racist, for whatever reason, I just don't get super up in arms about it. Now, I will, you know, talk shit about those people. But, like, I don't feel the need to, just go off, lose my head, raise my blood pressure. Like, I'm not gonna change that person's mind.
you know, like, you're 50 years old, you've had these beliefs for 50 years, and I'm sure you've come across your share of folks who have said, that's ignorant, that doesn't make any sense, like, black people aren't that bad, whatever, and your mind has not been changed. Who am I to come along after these 50 years that you've lived your racist life and get all angry and, you know, raising my blood pressure to try to change you? It's not gonna happen.
Yeah.
So that's for people that are, like, on the, you know, on the extreme. But when it comes to people that don't get it, I have a hard time with that, because I have seen a lot of hostility towards these people who are asking questions, you know, genuinely asking questions, like, why is this a problem? Or how is this racist? Or how is this sexist? Or how is this, you know? And because we get it, you know, we have that expert blind spot where it's like, I don't see what you don't see. And some people weren't educated, you know, whether it be taught or self-educated, like, they just weren't, and that's a reality. So it might seem to you unfair that someone can live their merry life without being aware of all the oppressions and marginalizations that you face, but that is real life.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's fair or productive to, you know, be hostile toward those people. Like, I think that one of the biggest signs of intelligence is to be able to say that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you don't understand. To admit that takes a lot. So I think it's important to, I'm not saying that you gotta be their teacher, but, you know, to just have some compassion, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so number four. Assuming that the importance of your movement or cause is intuitive, and that people are, insert ist, because they don't understand. So this ties into number three also, right? But there, I think it goes a little bit deeper in saying that basically you assume that somebody is a bigot or a racist or a sexist or homophobic or xenophobic or yada, yada, yada because they don't understand.
Yeah.
It's like, no, maybe they just genuinely don't get it. Maybe they've never had a conversation about it. Maybe they, like a lot of us liberals, live in an echo chamber where all they hear or talk to or are exposed to are people that reflect their own beliefs and thoughts and all of those things.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, for certain parts of the country, there are genuinely people that have never met or had conversations with black people.
Yeah.
That's reality.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy to think about if you're from the city, but there are parts of the country where there are no black people. So if someone doesn't understand, you know, Black Lives Matter or something like that, who's from freaking, I don't know, Wyoming or something. I'm sure there are probably black people in Wyoming. I don't know. Wherever there are no black people. Like, if they don't understand, it may make sense. And so I think if we want to actually accomplish something, and we actually want to accomplish, you know, and inform social change, we have to be patient, you know, rather than constantly, like, beating down on people. Beating down on the wrong people, in fact, because who we're actually mad at are, like, our judicial system or something like that, right? So those are the people that we should be mad at, but instead we're beating up on, like, random, like, Joe walking down the street or commenting on our post.
Yeah, no, I had a roommate who was from a really small town in Missouri. And he knew I was doing LGBT work. And he very calmly, very was like, Zama, can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah. And he's like, so I met one of those, I saw one of those people at a bar that, like, you know, are men but dressed like women. And I just, you know, I said something and someone told me it was wrong. And I, you know, I just want to know why. He's like, I called him a lady boy. And I don't know why that's wrong, but he was like serious.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, well, you know, that could be offensive because a person who, if you're describing a transgender person that they want to be identified and referred to as the correct pronoun. And so they probably would prefer that you, you know, refer to him or her as her or him, depending on how he or she is presenting himself. And so just had a conversation about, like, transgender people and what that means, and that, you know, ladyboy can be offensive because you're, and so, but, and I, you know, I could have just been like, wow, you are so ignorant. That is so offensive. But, you know, he asked me privately, me and him, like, in our house, and I was able to explain. And he went away from the conversation being like, okay. And he was honest. He's like, I'd never seen someone like that before. And even the way he talked about it, someone could be like, someone like that? What do you mean? And it's like, well, he really never, like, has encountered. I mean, I didn't, you know, meet someone who was transgender or who was out about being transgender until I was in college. And so before then, I had never met someone who was transgender. And so I was kind of like, no, like, you know, if you've never met someone like that, then you are going to have questions. And the most appropriate thing is to have a negative experience and to be like, okay, I was called out for it, but why? Because he could have just been like, I got called out for it, fuck that, I'm still going to keep saying it. But he wanted to know. Or he could have
been angry. F you and whatever it is that you're going through, like, that's not my, you know, that's not my life, so I don't care. And
yeah.
Like, no, he actually wanted to know and came to you, someone that he knows about this, and asked genuine questions.
Yes.
You know? And
So I definitely agree with that it's, sometimes we can't just, we do have to take the time to, if someone really wants to know, then we have to take the time, even if you're educated about it, to explain, because some people just don't know.
Yeah, we need, like, these, you know, the woke movement needs more patience.
Yes.
We automatically assume that everybody's consuming the same media that we are, everybody's exposed to the same things that we are, and it's like, no, people lead very, very, very different lives.
Yes.
Okay, and so that brings me to number 5. Gangs. Gangs, all caps. With exclamation points, mad exclamation points, because people get woke and get hella clicky. Like, why are you in a clique? Why are you in a gang? When it's supposed to be about celebrating open-mindedness and inclusivity. Yeah. I don't understand why it's like you get woke and then suddenly you are holier than thou. Like, and it's just all about you being vegan, you being gluten-free, like, you being Black Lives Matter, you being this, you being that, and it's like, no, calm down, take a step back, take five steps back, pause, reflect, meditate, do something that will help you to recognize that you are not better than everybody else just because you know some stuff, just because you know the word non-conforming. Just because you know all the, all the Black Panthers' names. Just because you know who founded the Black Lives Matter movement. Hmm. Just because you know what gluten-free is. Yeah. Like, I don't, or just because you managed to be vegan for longer than a week. Like, calm down. Oh, because now you meal prep. Now you just know everything there is to know about nutrition. And people that don't work out or people that eat meat ain't shit. Calm down. Bring it down a notch. Come back down to earth, where everybody, you know, has a different way of living. Everybody has a different way of understanding life and the types of compromises and sacrifices that they're willing to make, you know? And I mean, we just have to be more patient. We have to be more accepting. We have to be more self-reflexive, because I think that those are three areas where right now, as it stands, the woke movement is lacking.
Yeah. Yeah. And so moving on to number 6, I always like to say, like, I'm not invincible. The woke get tired too. So just like, sometimes I feel like, let me be tired and get some self-care. I just, you know, people know me as, you know, someone who's very opinionated, someone who, speaks out on a lot of different issues. But, like, if I don't happen to speak out on something, or I didn't happen to have a certain opinion about something, or maybe I didn't know about something because I turned off my phone and didn't, you know, follow what Trump did, or follow, you know, if I'm not caught up yet with the murder, if I don't know anything, if I didn't know every shooting that happened all over the country, I feel like sometimes people are really, can really get on you for not being on 24/7. And I feel like sometimes I really need to turn my phone off and or not follow the news or not see what's going on in order to be okay. And sometimes it's just not received well by other woke people.
Yeah, like I feel like if there are any socio-political folks that are people that are invested in socio-political movements that need to cope it is people who are a part of the woke movement.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, there's just bad news after bad news after bad news after bad news. Like, you need time to cope and deal with your mental health. Like, I mean, you don't even have to be, you don't even have to necessarily be woke. You have to be just aware and, you know, aware of what's going on in the world. Like, if you are a marginalized person and you see someone else who you identify with being harmed, murdered, killed, that wears on you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you might need some time to, like, sit and reflect with the fact that people don't give a fuck about people that look like you.
Yeah.
And so, no, may have, like you said, missed the thing that Trump said, because Trump is saying some shit every day. So
right,
honestly,
like, every hour.
Tomorrow I'll be caught up.
Yeah, yeah. One of my next one is kind of feeding off of one of yours, but kind of the other side of it. So your number three was, like, overly hostile to folks who don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And my number seven is looking down on less woke folks and belittling them and getting on our high horses.
Mm-hmm.
So not so much, like, being mean to people, but, like, the way that you feel that you're better than people because you know more about this one area. Or, and, like, I'm not attacking people who are vegan, but I'm just saying in my experience, I've been, like, shat on by people who are vegan if I happen to say I eat meat, especially being pregnant. And I feel like sometimes people will kind of pass that side eye. Like, if they see me, oh, just recently I was, like, eating a bag of chips.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to this woman who's, like, she's not vegan, but she's super health, like, conscious. And so I was telling her I was really hungry, and I saw her look at my chips and then look at me, and then I was like, And I was just, I could just feel the judgment of, like, oh, shit, she's saying something because I'm eating chips. And
wow.
So it was just kind of like, you know, feeling like I don't want to feel, why would I want to align myself with people who make me feel bad about myself when we're supposed to be, like, supporting each other and helping each other through the movement? So it doesn't help the woke movement if we, one, are mean to people or hostile to people who don't necessarily understand or fully get what we're fighting for or the cause, but also if you come with this sense of, like, arrogance or, like, better than thou attitude, that turns people off and they're not going to want to listen to you and we're not going to get much accomplished. And so that's just something that it's kind of frustrating for me among the woke community.
Yeah, same.
My number eight is pretending like we don't have more growing to do. I saw this quote and it says, being socially conscious is a journey, not a destination. So it feels like sometimes people feel or act like they've reached ultimate wokeness and they're like 25. And then I'm like, I just don't know if you'll ever reach ultimate wokeness, like, in your life. Like, I feel like if I stopped growing at 28, then that means that I would think badly about myself because I haven't experienced a lot of things. I haven't fully been a parent. I haven't experienced the losses of, you know, my parents, losses of, like, siblings. Like, I haven't experienced a lot of things. I haven't accomplished a lot of things I want to do. And so what I've learned is, like, sometimes I can be wrong. Sometimes I can be problematic. You know, I still have, like, issues about, like, am I over Kanye? Am I not? And I feel like that's just because I don't know. Like, the podcast is woke-ish. Like, I'm woke, but I'm also ish. Like, I don't know about everything. And I feel like sometimes there are some people in the woke-ish community who act like they know everything about everything and they know everything that there is to be and they're totally fine. They're unproblematic and they never have any issues. And it makes me feel like I can't relate to that person, since so maybe I'm not woke, or maybe I'm not part of his community, or maybe I'm not wanted, you know? So I feel like it's a good thing to admit that you have more growing to do.
Yeah. I think that a lot of these, I'm just thinking about it as you're talking, I feel like a lot of these people, specifically on, like, Instagram, right, or Twitter, I think that they might be, like, looking for people that are, I guess, not woke in an area where they're woke so that they can criticize them. Right? So it's like, they're obviously people that probably know more about one thing than another, and they would never admit that. Like, these, like, holier than thou woke people, these people that have reached the pinnacle of wokeness at 20 when they are still in college and have not lived any life, never even had a job,
yeah.
But yet you are like so woke, you know everything that there is to know about the world and about living, and you always have something negative to say to the next person. Like, oh my God, I can't believe you didn't know this. How do you not know this? How do you not get it? Like, all these, you know, all these crazy, crazy criticisms. And it's like, you haven't done anything. You go and look at their profile, and this is somebody who's like posting their high school graduation or recently posting their prom pictures. Like, if you don't go sit down, if you don't go sit down somewhere and like, you don't even know how to, you don't even know what a budget is. Like, you don't know what it means to grocery shop, to fill up your own gas tank.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, how to apply for a lease. Nothing. You know nothing. And yet you are telling me, who is a good seasoned 10 years older than you, how I don't know something.
Yeah, no. My number 9 is, there can be disagreement amongst the woke movement. We come from different walks of life. How can we expect all of us to agree on how to be woke? We should be able to discuss different ideas without excluding or drowning some ideas out of the movement. Mm. And this, for me, really is highlighted with the immigration debate. And so with immigrants, there are immigrants from different types of countries. I have friends who are second generation. I have friends who are first generation. I have friends who are undocumented. I have friends who are documented, and we all have different experiences. And so I don't always agree with my friends on every single immigration issue. No, I don't even always agree with them on how we should resolve it, how involved we should be, whether we agree on the policies, whether we should vote for the same candidate. And I think that sometimes I feel that, like, especially when I hear from older immigrants, like immigrants who have been here in the country, the same amount of years that I've been alive, and who have seen different presidents, who have seen different policies, who have seen not only ICE who have been here pre-ICE, but when ICE was established. And when they say things about certain policies or how much fight we can have or how we should approach things politically correct or how politically correctness is wrong or how we shouldn't be so violent or how we shouldn't be so vocal, I see a lot of us younger people or a lot of certain people being like, no, we have to push back. We have to be in their face. We have to do this and we have to do that, without really listening and being like, okay, well, this person has been in the fight for a really long time. Let's hear out why they think that that strategy works. And maybe they tell us this, you know, it's better to be calm. It's better to do this. It's better to become this way. It's better to approach it with this attitude. Then I can ask them, well, does it work in this context? Well, how is that president different from this president? But I just feel like sometimes people make it seem, especially in the immigrant woke movement, that we all have to be on the exact same page, and we all can't, because we're so diverse. Mm-hmm. We come from different countries. We come from different walks of life. We're different ages. We've had different experiences. And so although I do think that there should be some agreement, because that's how progress is made, I think that amongst ourselves, like in meetings, in, you know, behind closed doors, like we should be allowed to disagree with each other. And just because we're both immigrants doesn't mean that I have to agree with everything that you have to say. And so I think that that's just been, I wanted to add this to the list, because this is just something that I personally have experienced in the woke movement that I am most active in, which is the immigrant movement, and just kind of wanting to highlight that it can be okay to have discussion. Like, discussion is not negative. It's, you know, it can lead to an exchange of ideas and to seeing different sides. Of course, you can't like come at me crazy, but you know, if we're sitting down and we're both already starting on the same page being immigrants, then yeah, I'm gonna listen to what you have to say. And I don't know if everyone really, you know, takes that approach, and I don't know if that's helpful.
I think one of the main cleavages I think that exist, not necessarily in Black Lives Matter, but like in, I don't even know what you would call, or what do you call the like movement for racial inequality, but outside of Black Lives Matter? You know, like, so there was the Civil Rights Movement, and then I don't know what is between the Civil Rights Movement and Black Lives Matter. So I guess, like, just among people that are, like, passionate about racial equality, and I'm thinking specifically about Black people, there is a huge, huge, huge cleavage between those who are from the hood, who grew up impoverished, and those who did not. And that's something that it's hard, it's really difficult to have that discussion, because it's hard to explain to someone who has never had to deal with, I don't know, like, say, being on government assistance, or doesn't know, or has never seen anybody be killed, or, you know, has never seen, like, a drug raid, or doesn't know anybody who has drug addiction, maybe someone who has been on crack. Like, these are things that are pretty stereotypical of growing up Black in the hood, right? These are things that people experience. And it's hard to explain to someone who did not have that experience why this is not all those people's fault.
Yeah.
You know, why these are actually, why people who sell drugs, or how people who sell drugs are actually oppressed. How people who are in gangs are actually oppressed.
Yeah.
And are dealing with trauma. Like, people, they don't understand that. You know, and so a lot of times it can feel like talking to somebody who's white. Like, that's discussion. Oftentimes can be the exact same. The same way that you would have to explain it. Like, well, they're, you know, they're, like, they're killing each other and da-da-da-da-da. And it's like, yes. And these are people who have seen X, Y, and Z, who have experienced X, Y, and Z in their short 16 years of life.
Yeah.
Like, how do they know how to cope with that?
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, I think that, yeah, there, we, like you said, like, we all come from different walks of life. We come from really diverse backgrounds. And even though we might have a shared label, whatever that label might be, our experiences with that label can be very different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then my number 10 is, I know you kind of hit on earlier just about, like, educating people, and I brought the experience of my roommate, but my 10 goes mostly for a specific situation. So it's like, being woke does not mean it's my job to teach you. And I saw a quote from someone I follow on Instagram that said, Black women aren't Google. And what I mean specifically is that, like, I don't always, it's not my job to always be the person to have to, like, explain to you or break stuff down. And this comes from my experience as being in, like, a lot of white networks. And so I feel like sometimes I'm put on the spot a lot. And I don't know necessarily if people really want to learn, or people really want to hear my opinion, or if they're just like, oh, immigrant person, have this debate with me. And it's just like, it's not my job to, like, practice with you about what it's like to talk to another immigrant, or so that you can build up your points of debate about why immigration is bad. It's like, I'm pretty good at judging character, and I'm pretty good at knowing when someone genuinely wants to learn about my immigrant history and wants to know. I mean, like, even you have asked me questions about, like, you know, well, who can get assistance? Well, who's in, who, what do you think we should do about immigration? Like, do you agree about open borders? And that is, like, coming from a genuine place of concern and interest, whereas other people are just like, so you think we should just let all illegals in? And it's like, okay, then no, then that's, I don't see that that's a conversation that's going to be conducive or, like, healthy for me. And I, just because I'm one of the few, for some people, I'm the only immigrant they know. I mean, they might know, like, their Maria who cleans the house. And I use that example because I actually know some,
their Maria?
Yeah, because I actually know people who have a Maria who clean their house. So it's not like I'm using the stereotype of a Maria. This is actually a specific situation of someone I know who has a housekeeper named Maria. So it's like, yeah, they could argue that they do know an immigrant person because they know someone who cleans their house. But in terms,
they don't know nothing about
her.
They don't even know if she has kids or not.
But, like, in terms of, like, people that they interact with outside of someone that they pay or someone that they work with, I am the only immigrant person they speak to. And so sometimes I find myself as their, like, quote-unquote resource or their quote-unquote practice buddy to be able to have conversations. And I don't feel like they're conversations so that they can learn about just the experiences of immigrants. And so that's why my number 10 was like, it's not my job to teach you. I will teach you because, you know, I'm training to be a professor. I want to be able to explain to people who really want to learn. But if I smell that it's disingenuous, then no, it's not my job to be able to, just because I'm your token, what a brown friend, to have to put myself in a situation where we're having uncomfortable conversations. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. Okay, so that concludes the list that Zelma and I put together, but we had a few people write in and tell us what their beefs were with the woke movement. And so, number one, some people in the movement are disingenuous. People keep hashtagging stay woke and making a mockery of the movement. And so, yeah, I mean, I share that frustration. Like, I think that, you know, people want to be a part of trends. You know, things that they think are, like, in fashion or whatever at the time. Like, this is so fetch right now, so let me, you know, get in on the hashtag. And it's, like, stuff that they actually just don't care about at all.
Yeah.
You know, and it actually makes, it kind of makes the movement look bad a little bit because it can color someone's perception of what it even is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that definitely irritates me. Number two, being woke, quote-unquote woke, in one area doesn't necessarily mean I automatically agree with every quote-unquote struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I also, I definitely, like, that resonates with me a ton because, like I said earlier, like, sometimes I'm like, damn, like, do I have to, for instance, agree with the slut walk because, or do I have to agree with, like me, like, I'm not a feminist, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't identify as a feminist. Now, that doesn't mean I don't support a ton of feminist tenets. I do, but I don't agree with or identify as feminism for my own reasons.
Yeah.
Like, as a black woman, I just don't feel that the movement is for me. Definitely wasn't, you know, definitely wasn't created with people like me in mind. And so I have chosen not to be a part of that gang. And I think that there are probably a lot of women out there right now like, what? How can you not identify as a feminist? And I've had a ton of those conversations. If anybody wants to write in and ask me, totally
yeah,
fine
or
about.
Listen to episode, I think it's 3.
Oh,
or...
Yeah. So we have a feminist episode kind of like toward the beginning,
uh-huh.
I think episode 3. But yeah, like, I have had a ton of conversations with women that are like side-eyeing me. Even my like old faculty advisor, it was kind of like, we had that conversation, it was kind of painful, and it's like, I just don't, it doesn't resonate with me.
Yeah.
I don't identify with it, you know, but me, you know, really being passionate about gender issues, that does not negate that passion that I have for gender issues. And I think that some people would assume that it does.
Yeah.
And then last, number 3, woke folks can't take constructive criticism. I think that that is true. I don't think that that's true for everybody. Obviously, these are all generalizations, right? But I think that oftentimes the wokest people feel like they are the most educated, the most enlightened. They know all there is to know about equality and social justice. And, you know, they just are not open to being corrected about things. Or not open to, you know, oftentimes even people that identify in a way that they don't and are actually, like, for instance, if you have a person who is a black cis woman, a black cis heterosexual woman, and you have someone who identifies as gay educating her about, I don't know, about being gay or about LGBTQ movement, and she is resistant to that education because she just knows all there is to know as an ally. And it's like, no, we have to be open to being put in our place and being told that, like, this is what the real is. Like, everything that you're saying isn't necessarily true, or even things have changed, because things change, and sometimes really quickly in a lot of these movements.
Yeah.
And so we have to be open to, you know, outside critiques, even from people that we may not even consider woke. Like, we may look at people and be like, what do you know? Like, you ain't a part of this movement or whatever.
Yeah.
And just completely close ourselves off to anything that they have to say. But it's important to be receptive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think receptivity is, like, the last thing that I am going to emphasize that should be incorporated more into the movement.
Yeah.
So that wraps up our What's Being Slept On segment. I hope that y'all enjoyed that. Us kind of turning our criticism inward onto ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so please write in and let us know what you think. If there's anything that you think should be added to the list, we are open to hearing that.
Yeah. And thank you for those who submitted their, you know, your feedback to us. In the future, if you'd like to contact us, you can always email us at woke.ishpodcast@gmail.com or just follow us on Instagram at wokeishpodcast. We'll, you know, every now and then be dropping some questions to get feedback, some surveys, some polls. I know we want to know if you guys would be interested in us doing a Facebook or IG live episode. So feel free to comment under our clips. Every week we try to post little snippets of our episodes so that you can get an idea of what we're talking about. Always interested in what you guys have to say. Send us a DM if you want a more private conversation. Thank you to all those who have been. We appreciate every time we get feedback from you guys, especially when it's telling us about, you know, a response to a specific episode. You can also follow us on Twitter at
Woke-ish Talk. I've actually been saying it wrong for the last, like, 10 episodes, so I'm sorry about that if y'all tried to find us. It's Woke-ish Talk on Twitter.
Okay. And so next week, we're actually going to be taking a break, and that's because I am doing my dissertation proposal defense. Woo! So I'm gonna be not only working on that last minute but also presenting. So hopefully I will be posting a picture of me post defense.
Yes, looking you will. You
looking very
will.
Happy. So send good thoughts, good vibes to me as well as I prepare for that. And that will give you guys a chance to catch up on any missed episodes. But don't worry, we will be right back the week after.
Yes, and please feel free to spread the word. Like, if you want to share any of our posts or any of our content, please do. Tell any of your friends or colleagues or whatever that you think might enjoy to listen to us about our show. We're trying to make this community bigger.
Yes.
So, yeah. Please let some folks know about us.
So until next time.
Thanks for listening. Bye.